RTL Stories, the podcast with Lisa Burke from RTL Group.
Here we are in the new world. Before our colleagues on the ground could even come up with some information, you already had information going on social network, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all those platforms. People shared photos and videos, and now we had to figure out, are those photos and videos all showing that situation, or maybe they showed other situations we didn't know yet, but then we tried to figure that out. And so we had kind of this puzzle in bringing together all those single pieces. Where did it happen? What happened? Who was he? Do we know anything more?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to RTL Stories, the podcast. I'm Lisa Burke, based here at RTL in Luxembourg. And in this series, we explore the lives of some extraordinary people who have made RTL their career home, investigate what they do and how they got there. Now, today, I have the pleasure of speaking to someone who is at the forefront of ensuring the accuracy of our news. He has a keen eye for detail and a passion for truth, starting his career as a trainee at news programme RTL Actuel and Bild magazine. Andreas Gröll worked as a freelance journalist for several years, including for the German public broadcaster WDR. And since joining RTL full-time in 2014, Andreas has been a vital part of the news-gathering process at InfoNetwork, RTL Deutschland's production company for news programmes. Andreas then went on to serve as a researcher for the news program RTL Extra before becoming head of verification at InfoNetwork. And since December 2020, Andreas has led the fact-checking team at RTL News, ensuring that their news coverage is accurate and reliable. He holds a bachelor's degree in journalism and a master's in market and media research. So welcome to the show, Andreas.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Now, before we jump into conversation, a little bit of background news on RTL News. It's part of RTL Deutschland, RTL Group's largest business unit. It is the most powerful journalistic unit for cross-media news, investigative and independent journalism and documentaries in Germany. So, Andreas, you are part of the fabric of this network. Why did you stay at RTL for over a decade?
Well, very good question. We have this brand slogan in German. It's called Willkommen zu Hause, which means welcome home. And I know it sounds a bit cheesy on here, but this is just the vibe I'm feeling, I'm getting in when entering this large building here, because I worked in, as you said, in several newsrooms, and they have all been great places of working and work environment. But there's a certain vibe to this company. It's very hard to explain. I think you kind of have to feel it. And I'm only speaking on my behalf here. But this kind of vibe, it's something special. It's something very approachable, and it kind of feels home. And once I'm starting to get into my career and seeing the opportunities I got here and using those opportunities and establishing ideas, It just really feels kind of home. It's more than a work environment here, and especially by the people you're meeting here, you're working with. These people make it a very unique place to me, and I can't think of working somewhere else. And really, I know it's cheesy, but it's the truth.
Well, that's a poster boy statement. But going back to your original starting off point as a trainee, I know that when we spoke, we had a chat a couple of weeks ago, and you were telling me about being a student. And in your student days, you were given a lot of responsibility. You were not just making the coffee.
No, that's really the case. And this is kind of the part of what I meant earlier and the special vibe. Coming here as a student, we got the responsibility of all the programs and working within the programs and all the editors and the the brands that we publish here. And we trying to give that forth to the next couple of students that are coming in here and trying to help us to become this big unit and this powerhouse of information and creativity. And me and my colleague who run this department, that's one of our key elements of leading to show young people to come in here, that we trust them, that we build our ideas with them together, and that they can be a part of this unique workplace here. And that is kind of the vibe I was talking earlier, and that really got me into it in the first place, yeah.
So it's a mutual respect for the people coming out of university, the people who really have a keen eye on news and the fast-changing nature of news. Now, your master's had a focus on media ethics, and that links perfectly with what you do now, fact-checking. And it has changed. We all see what's changing around us. How has fact-checking changed since the years of your degree?
Well, we know that fact-checking itself hasn't changed for centuries, so to speak, because journalists, people who wanted to give information to other people, my hope, were always trying to get all the facts right and then publish them out there for people to get informed and to build up their ideas and build up their minds. But as we know, and as we have seen in the last years or even months, technology is changing a lot of that. So basically, people do research, but they use all the aspects of the technological life and the development around to get even more information. And that plays into our job. It makes it easier sometimes. It can make it harder at other points. But it's a very, you know, a very movable, very dynamic and agile working place at the moment, because you never know which tools come up new, which are gone by a minute. So a lot of stuff happening there. And so you have to really focus on a lot of aspects of a journalistic research.
You use the word agile. We think about that when it comes to the speed of news and how people consume news as well. I suppose we could think about our audience as the clients, the consumers. And this is important as well for any news organisation. They want to maintain, RTL News will want to maintain a very strong line, of course, for fact-checking. But that is also versus getting the news out there fast. So it's reputation over speed. So how do you play that game?
Well, you know, there's this saying, and I know it's stressed a lot about last decades, to the quote says, be first, but first be right. And I know a lot of people stated that quote in the past, but true in the core. And so if you want to play devil's advocate, you could say, yeah, well, you're a break for your company, because first of all, you have to get to all the facts right, and then they have to wait with the publication. But I would say it's more of a working together with a lot of trust, a lot of forebroad trust, and knowing that once you get an information out there, it's very hard to get it back in. So once being wrong, that really is not a good thing to do. So you should at any point avoid that. So I think there was a time when, especially journalists, they really lacked a sense of publicating that they are yet not able to say more than they know. You know, sometimes stories really develop fast, especially today. And it's hard to say, well, I don't know about that. I have to figure it out. I have to do a lot of research to get the information out. And back in the time, I think people were not able to easily say what they didn't know. And I think that is changing at the moment. It's to me, it's good if you have the will to say, I don't know that yet, but I'm working on it to get it researched. And for that, I think we found a very good way to, at one point, be very fast, but then having the trust of our colleagues that they know that we are doing everything to get the facts right, and that we are on their side, and that we do want to break the news as well very fast. But our main target is to avoid any kind of big mistakes, any kind of mistakes that we're getting information out there that's actually not true, because that would be the worst.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So be first, but first be right. and the importance, as you have deeply underlined, of credibility and to be a trusted organisation. Because if something goes wrong, if a fact is not correct or is proven to be otherwise after the event, it is very hard to get to build credibility back. And then also underlining that journalists are allowed to not know everything. Now, again, when we were chatting, you had some fabulous examples, some of your favourite news stories over the years that you've worked on and really worked, I may say, almost like crime detectives. Can you give us some examples?
Well, on the day-to-day basis, a lot of stuff we do is to work in situations that are not easy to handle. For instance, conflicts or wars like the war of Russia in Ukraine or the conflict in the Middle East. And a lot of the times the warring parties, they give information out there about certain kind of events. And sometimes you have pictures or video of those events, and then you have the quotations from a warring party or from another source that you maybe don't know about. So you're trying to get that right. What is the source? Who is the source? What is the agenda of the source? Is the source trustworthy? I mean, all the stuff you did back in the past when there was no internet, no social media, but now you have a lot of stuff going on, a lot of content that has to be figured out. And then you're trying to locate them, maybe. We had the Al-Ali targeted, the hospital in Gaza targeted, and soon you had both conflict parties on the one hand, the Israel army forces, and on the other hand, Hamas, and both had their own explanation why the hospital has been targeted. And now you have to figure out in kind of real time from which side a grenade or a bomb had been shot at, or a rocket, and you need, you know how much time that takes to get that really figured out, and that's really hard to do. So these are those conflicts we're dealing with kind of every day, but as well you have some more more stories that are maybe a bit less tricky, for instance, as pictures that are going on social media and are being shared with some certain lies or disinformation. And now you have to figure out, is this an actual picture? Does it really show the truth? Is this quote really right? Did somebody really say this and that on audio and it had been leaked? These are the certain kind of things that we are dealing with on our everyday life.
And how do you know, how do you check where these sources are coming from?
Well, on the one hand side, we have our network of our correspondents, of colleagues within Germany and in Europe and the world. And we're doing it old-fashioned and calling people or asking people and helping us out with their information or asking colleagues. But then the not-so-old-fashioned stuff might be all the information that is mostly free on the internet, on social media, on forums, on websites where you can really research stuff, information about people, about places, about, I don't know, fauna and flora, whatever you like, about rockets, and you're all throwing that into one bin and trying to figure out which information is really necessary, which ain't, and trying to then to, with all the digital information and all the tools you have, tool set, we call that open source intelligence tools, and that's kind of a buzzword going on there. We trying to figure out all the information that is helpful to us, so we can then tell our editors, well, this video occurred on that and that spot in that location, and it was a morning around 8 o'clock, and I don't know whatever happened then.
Well, you have an example that I remember we spoke about, which was a right-wing terrorist. He tried to shoot people in the east of Germany, murdered two people and tried to shoot more in a synagogue with self-made weapons and rifles. So can you talk to us about that story, which happened around about 5 years ago?
Sure. I think it was in 2019, and it was Yom Kippur, the celebration, Israel celebration day. And Well, the story developed when there was an agency news going on. Yeah, shots been heard in the city of Halle, which is in eastern Germany. And soon there were colleagues on the way to the place, but we didn't know much. And so here we are in the new world. Before our colleagues on the ground could even come up with some information, you already had information going on social network, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and all those platforms. People shared photos and videos, and now we had to figure out, are those photos and videos all showing that situation, or maybe they showed other situations we didn't know yet? But then we tried to figure that out, and so we had kind of this puzzle in bringing together all those single pieces. Where did it happen? What happened? Who was he? Do we know anything more? And what we figured out was that on certain photos that we could verify as being actual pictures from that situation, there was a kind of a camera on his helmet. So he was wearing a military uniform, and it looks very military guy. And we saw this camera, and that we remembered Christchurch, the terrorist attack in a church, where somebody live streamed a terrorist attack, and so we thought, oh wow, this could be just one of those cases where somebody is trying to do the same thing but here in Germany. So we went to the internet, to certain sites, certain websites where we hoped to find more information and dig deep into right-wing terrorism websites, so to speak, image boards and stuff. And there we found a link to a live stream that was still ongoing. And this live stream really showed the helmet camera from the terror, from the terrorist, and filming that. And it was still live online. So with that information and all the knowledge we had then from our colleagues and on the ground and from the police and stuff, we could really build up this piece of puzzle or this puzzle to a real story. And I think we were one of the first, maybe the first who found that live stream, and before it was taken down and flagged by the platform. Yeah,
and it just shows also how fact checking goes. Absolutely runs in parallel, hand in hand, with the work of police forces.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if the police at that moment, if they had if they found the live stream. I'm sure nowadays they have special units that do the same. I don't know if they did it before. We then tried to figure it out and told them that we found the live stream and it was still ongoing, and we saved it before it had been flagged and taken down.
So you were happy.
I never got a feedback if they really relied on that information or not. But it was a perfect example of working together on the ground, old-fashioned journalism, as you would call it, maybe. And then from your desk far away and trying to figure out which opportunities, possibilities do I have from my desk to get other kinds of information, and then throwing that together and merging those both ways of doing unique, good journalistic work. I think that's the key and will be the key for the future.
Well, the future is all around us. It involves AI. It involves video and audio, which can also be created nowadays by AI. And I think you have another story, an example from your colleague's mother, who was almost scammed by audio AI.
Yeah, her mother was a victim of a fraud, or it, in the end, it didn't happen because she was smart enough to call her daughter. But it was a colleague of mine. She's a reporter for our programs, and therefore a lot of video and audio of her are available free on the internet. And what happened was that those fraudsters or scammers, they took some examples of her audio and recreated her voice with the help of AI. And then they researched for her family and apparently found her mother. And then called her and played her an audio of her alleged daughter, which wasn't her daughter, but the AI voice of her daughter, saying that she was in desperate need and that she's in police custody because she ran somebody over, I guess, or she had a crash or whatever, and that now she's handing over the phone to the police officers and that somebody's getting to her home to get some money so she can be released from custody. And yeah, the woman was in panic and the human engineering side of that fraud then kicked in, because once you think your child is calling for help, I think all your senses of realism and other stuff, they get thrown out immediately, and you're totally in panic mode and want to help your beloved child.
And you got to the bottom of that as well, thank goodness, in time before she was scammed. But obviously, this is an example of what's to come. It's right on our doorstep. It's literally encroaching upon our lives and our loved ones. And so you're going to have, well, I can't even imagine what's about to hit you, a wave of fake video and audio, and your work will become increasingly hard. So how are you as a unit thinking about solidifying your unit in order to tackle AI generated voice, AI generated video content, which is fake, may I add?
Well, the easy answer you always hope to get is, yeah, well, maybe if there's tools to create AI, then there will be tools to debunk them. but that is misleading, because it always needs more time to get those tools out there and to get it tested and that they are really affordable and that they do work for 100%. So I think you can rely on certain tools, and there will be some tools out there that can help you. I will say that, I'm pretty sure. But you have to rely on your journalistic thinking. You have to rely on your agile mindset, because getting an information what is out there and getting to know how people use those new methods is one key. Every day checking agile and dynamic, what can I do with my own senses, with my own techniques, with my journalistic thinking, with my network, for example? What we will have is the scaling of those AI frauds and the liberation of technology, so to speak. It will maybe increase the amount of content getting put out there, and that will target us as a media house and as a society. But what we may not forget is that those easy frauds, scams, disinformation, and fake news, which are basic lies or misinformation, maybe bad sources, that this stuff is still out there, and this is being shared as fast as possible at the moment. And this is one aspect we may not forget over the AI aspect. But in both ways, we are dealing with it, as in being very agile, very dynamic, very forethinking, how we could tackle them, how they affect us, and then agile, creating and recreating and rethinking how we set up ourselves with our techniques, with our tools, our mindset, and how we want to go forth with that for our publications.
And so, in conclusion, are you hopeful for the future of fact checking?
I have to be. I'm optimistic.
We're relying on you, Andreas.
Yeah. I'm optimistic, because I think in generally society does want truth and information that helps understand situations, that helps understand the world, and world is complicated. So I do have that mindset, and I think it's a very, very it could be a bright time for journalists and for journalistic houses and media houses, because at the moment, the platforms don't seem to be that reliable as we thought of maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And this could be the kind of loophole where journalism has to kick in, to jump in and to really take the force and take action, because I think our jobs is to be as good as possible, do our research and get the information out there, whether it's a reporting, whether it's a feature, whether it's a commentary, whatever kind of journalism you're looking at. And I think this is to be our time actually to shine, because we should be the one trusted, and not platforms that in the end cumulate disinformation and misinformation and don't really target that stuff. So yeah, I think should be a good time to be a fact checker at the moment.
Well, thank you so much, Andreas. You have encouraged more to join your team, I'm quite sure, through this conversation. And of course, it is a deeply important bedrock unit of anything to do with news and RTL News, of course. And thank you all so much for listening to this episode. Of course, if you are part of RTL, let us know your thoughts. You can do so through RTL Group Intranet in the comment section. You can also get in touch on one of the social media channels. Just search for RTL Group on LinkedIn, Instagram and YouTube. And we would, of course, love you to follow us on those channels anyhow. With that, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Andreas. And we will be with you in a short while. Thank you for listening.